Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. Republican presidential candidate Ben Carson is facing a major backlash over Islamophobic comments that he made to the press over the weekend. In conversation with NBC's Chuck Todd, Carson, who's African-American, said, quote, "I would not advocate that we put a Muslim in charge of this nation. I absolutely would not agree with that." To that, Representative Keith Ellison, the first Muslim in Congress, who is also African-American, responded by issuing a statement saying, "The freedom of religion is a founding principle of our nation." For Ben Carson, Donald Trump, or any other Republican politician to suggest that someone of any faith is unfit for office is out of touch with who we are as a people. Said Keith Ellison, "Every American should be disturbed that these national figures are engaging in and tolerating blatant acts of religious bigotry." Even fellow Republicans Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, and John Kasich denounced Carson's statement. So far, Carson is standing by them. Well, his controversy comes on the heels of the viral story of 14-year-old Texas teen Ahmed Mohammed's arrest over a so-called hoax bomb. The Muslim teen, whose father hails from Sudan, was handcuffed for bringing a homemade clock to school, only to be accused of trying to make a bomb. Mohammed's story moved hundreds of thousands of people to declare hashtag #IStandWithAhmed on social media. Joining me now is Dean Obidala. He's a former lawyer turned political comedian and writer. And he's the host of the Dean Obidala Show on SiriusXM Radio. He co-directed the comedy documentary The Muslims Are Coming, and his blog is called The Dean's Report. He writes for The Daily Beast and CNN.com. Welcome to Uprising, Dean.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
So it's been a really interesting few days to be a Muslim in the United States. And Ben Carson's statements about a Muslim not essentially, him not thinking that a Muslim should ever be president has added to that. Many Muslim groups have responded by saying he is unfit for president. And I'm wondering what your response is. I thought brain surgeons were supposed to be smart.
Well, I think Ben Carson was unfit for president far before this. I think he's one of the most unimpressive people I've met, and really not insightful and not a leader. I think this just adds to it, and I think that, you know, the voters of the GOP have a clear choice. If they want to support him, that's their choice. If they want to elevate someone with intolerant positions and define their party by that, that's their choice. And if they don't, they want to reject him and make it clear that they do want nothing to do with intolerance. That sends another message to the rest of America. So I really think the GOP is really at a crossroads with Ben Carson, with Donald Trump, and some of his comments about Latinos and immigrants and Muslims and women, what direction they want to go in. And we'll see what happens. I mean, of course, the irony of Ben Carson saying that a Muslim shouldn't be president because Islam is incompatible with the Constitution is the fact that his statement is actually incompatible with our Constitution.
Right.
You know, Article 6 of the Constitution says there should be no religious test. That was put in there by the founding fathers to prevent the very thing that Ben Carson's calling for. So, you know, if you want to talk about who's being inconsistent and not sharing the values of our founding fathers and of our nation, it's clearly Ben Carson.
Hmm. And then some of this, of course, Muslim bashing was started around Donald Trump, who seems like he took a break from bashing immigrants, Latino immigrants and Mexicans. But I don't think he's decided necessarily what his position on Muslims is. How do you respond to the Trump factor on Muslims?
Well, I think Trump is trying to play both ways. I mean, Thursday at his event in New Hampshire, he was just silent in the face of really anti-Muslim bigotry. He didn't say anything himself about Muslims that was negative. He just didn't correct somebody.
Right.
Even though a leader or someone with character or integrity should, he chose not to correct a bigot. His comments on Saturday were, "I love Muslims," similar to "I love Mexicans," after demonizing them. And then he said, "I would even put one in my cabinet or as my running mate." And then on Sunday, he seemed to backpedal a little, saying, well, it was Muslims who committed the problems. It wasn't Sweden who attacked us. So I think Trump is trying to navigate within the Republican Party primary, and the Republican Party has shown in polls have a much more negative view of Muslims than independent or Democrats do. I think he doesn't want to alienate them while at the same time not trying to have himself painted as a really intolerant person when he goes into the general election. I think that's going to be a challenge for Trump, just objectively. The comments about Latinos, things about women, and now with the Muslim comments, is painting a narrative that Donald Trump has some issues with groups in this country, be them women or Latinos or Muslims, has no problem when white supremacist groups endorsed him. And even though he was asked if he denounced their endorsements, he would not. You know, he paints a troubling picture. And in my heart, I don't think Donald Trump, I know Ben Carson won't be the nominee. I don't think Donald Trump will be the nominee. I think ultimately the GOP will come to their senses and nominate someone who's a little bit more reasonable and moderate.
At least on the surface, right?
They can nominate anybody they want.
Right. And I'm wondering, you know, I think it's important for us to reflect, even though it's easy to dismiss Trump because, and even Ben Carson, because their comments are just so ludicrous. At the same time, don't they influence the U.S. public? And isn't that a worrisome thing?
Well, that's the most worrisome, because they're not going to win their elections, probably. I mean, it's a long shot. For every candidate, it's a challenge. It's setting a tone, though, that you can demonize Muslims and that you can paint them as not being as American as any other group because of their faith, and that's okay. And that's obviously wrong. That's inconsistent with the values of our nation. It's no different than anti-Catholic comments made about John Kennedy in 1960, where the exact same allegations were made that Roman Catholicism was incompatible with our form of government and our values. It's no different than anti-Semitism in the 30s and 40s that was rampant in America, the idea that Jews were not loyal to this nation because they're Jewish. So we've seen this, and we've come through all of that. And it'll just take time, it'll take effort, and it also takes good people to no longer be silent when they see this bigotry and to call it out, whether it's on social media or in the media themselves, in the media when they make appearances, or to their elected officials, and telling them that there's no place for hate, there's no place for bigotry in the American political discourse. And I really hope that happens. I hope it's a wake-up call for certain people.
And what's also, I think, really important for us to look at in the discourse around what's happening in the United States and the political discourse here in the United States in general in the presidential elections is that you don't see enough people speaking out against what is being said. Now, certainly, I was sort of surprised to see Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz come out and say Ben Carson's statements were unacceptable, but there
right.
was just a handful of them. Were they, you know, shouldn't there have been, shouldn't statements like this essentially disqualify in the eyes of everybody these people running for president, but they don't.
Right. And if he had said the same thing about Jews, we would clearly see people upset. If he said the same thing about a certain sect of Christianity, we would see an outrage, or about a race. He said blacks or Latinos can't serve for whatever reason.
And in fact, Ann Coulter has come under fire.
We would see complete and universal outrage.
Yeah.
The fact Muslims are an easy scapegoat. They're easy to bully. We're a small community, maybe 2% of the country. And I think, though, in time we're going to see changes as I see more interfaith work done by Muslim leaders standing with Jews and Christians and vice versa, Christian and Jewish leaders standing with Muslim leaders, calling out hate. And I'm really hoping we'll see more of that as the next few days go on, that as other groups stand together with the Muslims and say, there's no place for this in American political discourse. You know, we're always going to have people who hate. We're always going to have a Klan in this nation. We're always going to have neo-Nazis. You know, that's life. You just want them to be in the fringes of society, not in the mainstream. And I'm hopeful that things will change better in the future. We will see.
And in fact, Ann Coulter did come under some fire for saying effing Jews
right.
recently. Now let's talk about the other story that came into the mainstream political discourse in terms of how Muslims are treated. And that was a story of, in my view, the adorable 14-year-old boy,
right.
Ahmed Muhammad in Texas, in Irving, Texas. And first of all, in your mind, how clear was it that his treatment was directly the result of his name and faith and possibly skin color?
Right. Well, we're all speculating. We have to be honest about that.
Yeah.
I think, though, if you look at the climate in Texas and in Irving, Texas, where he's from, it would paint a picture that Muslims are demonized. The mayor there, Beth Van Dyne of Irving, several months ago made claims that Muslims want to impose Sharia law and impose Islamic law in the state of Texas. So you have a culture created there where the law enforcement and school officials are led to believe that Muslims are dangerous, they're inherently a threat. And I think the police act in accordance with that. I don't know if the police themselves are racist or bigots. We don't know the answer to that. But I do know they navigate through a climate that is very hostile towards Muslims, thankfully, greatly due to the elected officials, and they set the tone. So I think it played a role. We don't know exactly to what percent it played. The idea that a Muslim student's going to bring a hoax bomb to school is insane. You know, he's already been called a terrorist and things by his classmates in the past. Who is going to go do this? And if anyone was going to leave a hoax bomb, common sense says what they do is they leave it someplace to scare people. That's the thrill in the people who do hoaxes, not bring it up to your teachers and brag about it and say, look what I built. So, you know, we hear arguments on the right, typical garbage, but thankfully really had an outpouring of support for Ahmed Mohammed. And I think it really had a week of showing a lot of Americans who were blind to anti-Muslim bigotry that there is, it's alive and well, and it's percolating out there, and we need more people to stand with us. I mean, we need the good people, as Martin Luther King said, to no longer be silent, yeah. Because that's the most painful part. It's not the bad people. We'll always have the bad people, but the most painful part is the deafening silence of the good people.
And I think you're right. The response, particularly on social media, was so heartening. Such a big, you know, viral campaign, hashtag I Stand With Ahmed. And then, you know, a day or two later, when right-wing anti-Muslim forces had time to marinate on the story, they came out of the woodwork, and you had some of the usual suspects. You had Bill Maher and you had Richard Dawkins. And I just was surprised that either of these men would sink this low. Both of them have a history of anti-Muslim bigotry. But sure. To Richard Dawkins, I mean, essentially citing that Ahmed Mohammed, likely was creating a hoax bomb. You know, he's supposed to be a scientist, somebody who's right. Supposed to actually, follow fact. How shocked were you by his and Bill Maher's response?
I'm not shocked at all. I mean, we know their history. I mean, Bill Maher on his show Friday actually called me out by name. He read my article for the Daily Beast, and he mispronounced my last name horribly, but he was upset that I'd written an article defending Ahmed Mohammed and painting a picture in the Daily Beast, that article was, that we have a climate of anti-Muslim sentiment, that it's alive and well, especially in Irving, Texas, and that contributed to it. And Bill Maher was upset and actually defended religious profiling of people, and he listed attacks by Muslims that have happened in the last few years and saying, well, this is what you get. And he said, a parent should sit down and tell Ahmed, this is what happens, this is why. So I guess for Bill Maher, he would also tell black parents or Latino parents, sure, blacks and Latinos have committed crimes in the past, so as a result, you deserve the racial profiling that you're getting. And if Bill Maher did anything but that, he'd be intellectually dishonest. So I'd love to see if Bill Maher will be honest about it, or does he only, the fact that he only hate Muslims so much that he thinks that we should be, we get religious profiling in violation of not only the law, but the sense of morality. And I was so happy when I watched Bill Maher on Friday that Jorge Ramos from Univision pushed back very hard at Bill Maher to the point Bill Maher lost his temper and got angry at Jorge Ramos. But, you know, Mr. Ramos is Latino, I'm sure is aware of the pain of being profiled based on your ethnicity or your race and how frustrating that can be and how soul-sucking it could be and how it affects minorities' communities' sense of worth in their own nation. Hmm. And that's what makes it so very wrong. Hmm. So, I mean, Bill Maher is essentially saying that Muslims have less rights than everybody else, and HBO has no problem with that. And that's their call. I mean, it's their network, and they can have on a man who advocates that, just like in the 30s and 40s was a man, Father Charles Coughlin, famous radio guy, who spewed anti-Semitism. At the time, to make money off it, they continued to have that person on air. And then they look back years later, and I'm sure they were embarrassed by that. I think the same thing will happen with Bill Maher. They'll look back and say, I can't believe they let a man on, we let a guy on our air demonize Muslims to this point.
Well, finally, Dean, the things that Ahmed Mohammed went through in the those few days, despite getting an invitation from the White House and getting a lot of love after his horrific treatment, what he experienced is sadly common. Certainly, African American students experience criminalization on an almost daily basis. But I think we haven't really also noticed how much Muslim students and Muslim children face in schools. Do you think his story can shed light on this?
Well, that's the hope. In some way, many people saw the picture of Ahmed Mohammed in handcuffs, and I think that really moved people. And it's no different than the videos we now see of police officers abusing African Americans, harassing them and literally killing them on camera. That's been going on for decades in the African American community. We've all heard it. But until we saw a video of it, it didn't move people and didn't make people aware of what's going on. So I really hope that, the people, all of us, the good people of any color and people of color can stand together. And we can say, hey, it's wrong when Donald Trump demonized Latinos. It's wrong when the police engage in misconduct against African Americans because of their skin color. Or even in New York City here, the police actually engage in religious profiling of Muslims. So that we can stand united in that, because I don't think, at least in our Muslim community, we don't have enough allies, and for years we have not been great allies for other communities, and I think that's changing now in the last couple of years. Since Ferguson, I've seen more and more Muslims engaging in issues about police misconduct and mass incarceration more than they ever did before. And 30% of the Muslim population in America is African American, so we're natural allies. And we need to do more with that community and the Latino community, and hopefully our white brothers and sisters who are friends and allies will join with us, and we can all stand united against any kind of bigotry or misconduct by police or elected officials.
Well, that is a great note to end on. Dean, always appreciate your work. Thanks so much for joining
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having me on, Sonali.
And actually,
have
where
a great
can,
day.
You have a serious radio show. Where can our audience catch that?
Every Saturday morning. It's live. It's early for West Coast, but it's live 10 a.m. to noon on Channel 121, Sirius XM Insight, and that's Eastern Time. And it really is a voice, a platform for Muslim voices. Not all my guests are Muslim, but a lot of the issues deal with Muslims, and I'm Muslim, and we really try to give people a different point of view of issues of the day, of the week.
And we'll post that to our website details where people can catch it. Thanks so much, Dean.
Thanks. Take care.
I've been speaking with Dean Obidala, a former lawyer turned political comedian and writer. He hosts the Dean Obidala Show on SiriusXM Radio, and you can find a link at uprisingwithsonali.com. He also co-directed the comedy documentary The Muslims Are Coming. You can read his writings at The Daily Beast and CNN.com. His blog is called The Dean's Report. This is Uprising. We'll be right back after this break.